Today on the TV Time Machine, we welcome Jamie Farr of the classic TV series MASH. Mr. Farr played Corporal Max Klinger on this legendary TV series, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983, garnering 14 Emmy Awards and a remarkable 109 Emmy nominations. Over the next segment, Jamie Farr will talk about his memorable character and the remarkable history of MASH, which airs weeknights at 7 and 7:30 p.m. on MeTV. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to wear a clingy dress, feel free to contact Corporal Klinger as we triage the present in order to recover in a post-operative past. Jamie, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
My pleasure. Listen, the fact that I'm still here and that I can even get on a machine is great. This is a happy moment for me.
Now, of course, you played the legendary Corporal Klinger on the classic TV series MASH, which will be featured in a very special way on MeTV.
Now, Jim, that is correct. I picked out my favorite episodes, not necessarily the greatest episodes, but they're favorites of mine because they have a personal meaning to me and have a personal backstory to them. I guess in our area, it'd be 7 to 8 o'clock.
Now, you mentioned that some of your favorite episodes have personal meaning to you. What did you mean by that? How meaningful
are
they?
Well, for example, when I first came to the show, I was not a contract player. Corporal Klinger's character was introduced with about four or five lines on one of the very first episodes in the first year. The episode's called Chief Surgeon Who. And so I came on this one day. I had no idea who I was playing. I didn't know I was even going to be wearing a dress. I got $250 for the day.
Wow.
And I came on, and I said, what the heck kind of character is this? There wasn't much of a backstory for him. I just came on and looked like I was trying to get out of the Army by wearing this woman's Army Corps uniform. So I picked that particular episode out because that introduced the character. And then some of the other episodes that I picked out were things that were part of that first season where I wasn't under contract because it actually helped me to become a contract player. I picked those shows. I'm trying to remember the titles. It doesn't mean anything to the audience. But as I said, I came on for one day and stayed for 11 years. So I wanted to have the audience see how I managed to impress not only the viewers but the producers of the show that made them want to sign me as a regular player.
Now, MeTV is also airing the final episode of MASH and also...
Yep. Uh-huh. Which was the highest-rated show in the history of television. It still holds that title, although it's not the highest-rated show on television. The two previous Super Bowls topped us. But as I point out, in the United States of America, MASH went off the air, I think, in 83. There were 200 million people, and about 125 million watched it. Today, there are 311 million people in the United States. And the two Super Bowls outdid us, but not by much.
Well, for those out there who weren't around in 1983, what was it like during the run-up to the final episode of MASH, and what was the impact when it ultimately aired?
I have to tell you, I can still remember that final week. Actually, the final episode was not the final show that we shot. The final episode was shot prior to the very last show we did. The very last episode that we did was about burying a time capsule. And everybody knew that we were going off the air. And there must have been 400 people on the set at stage 9 when we shot that final scene when the director was going to say, okay, that's a cut and print it. There was news people, radio, newspapers from around the world that were there. That entire week, we were probably on every talk TV show there was, every morning show, every evening show, every local news show. It was a horrendous time for us because we knew that it was the finality of something that was very important to us as actors and very important to the world of television. I tell you, there was a lot of crying going on, and and reminiscing and so forth. It was a one of the worst weeks we ever had, saying goodbye to everybody and hugging and having to tell everybody. And of course, there was the gamble too. You know, when you go off the air and you got such a great show and your career is going well, you wonder, okay, what's going to happen to me next? That was an unknown factor in our lives. And fortunately for all of us, we were all very lucky and went on to other things.
Right, and also over the years, you guys became very close. You basically became like a family as a cast.
Well, yes, for 11 years, you know, we were together. It's very interesting. We're still friends, and we get together quite often, maybe several times a year. Alan, Alda, and Loretta Swit live in the New York area. Gary Berghoff lives in the Florida area. David Ogdensteyers lives up in Oregon. Bill Christopher, Mike Farrell, and myself, we're still here in California. Of course, we've lost some of our cast members. Right. But we get together for dinners. And when we were on the show, we were talking about our marriages and our children. We now talk about our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. It's amazing the connection and lineage that we've had over the years.
Now, of course, on the show, you spent much of the time wearing dresses. But
yes.
But over time, Klinger stopped wearing women's clothing when he became company clerk. So as an actor, how did you adapt to that change? And did you feel it was time for your character to mature?
Well, I think that the writers realized, you know, usually when a character left, I think the first one was Wayne Rogers. When he left, that was Trapper John. And then they replaced Trapper John with Mike Farrell as B.J. Honeycutt. And then, of course, then when Larry Linville, McLean Stevenson left, and then they replaced him with Harry Morgan as Colonel Potter. And then when Larry Linville, Major Burns, left, they replaced him with David Ogdensteyers. When Gary left, they figured, you know what, why bring in another character? Why don't we just, to add to the characterization of Klinger and to change his character somewhat, make him the company clerk, which would give them new storylines, which I thought was very smart on their part, and also gave me a chance to exhibit some of the other things that I could possibly do as an actor. I didn't want him to think I was just the one joke. You know, the guy shows up wearing a dress, and that's his gimmick. And I'm very proud of the things that I did and the things that they gave me to do.
Right, and also at that point, Klinger had a lot more serious moments than he had earlier in the series.
Yeah, well, there was growth in the character, which is always nice to see. And I think they did that with many of the characters on the show, that the writers did an excellent job of showing different facets of the character so that they remained interesting to the audience.
So what made MASH different from other situation comedies at that time?
Well, first of all, it was a different kind of comedy. As I said, they had to come up with a new name for us. They called us a dramedy because we did do some very, very important and serious shows, you know, episodes. We always had two things going. We had a plot and a subplot, and sometimes the plot would be silly and the subplot would be serious. Then sometimes we'd reverse those things. So it was always entertaining. You got to see some of the serious sides of what happened in a war, and you got to see the goofy sides of what people needed to do to maintain their sanity by doing crazy things. In most cases, you know, you don't have life and death in a comedy. In this case, we did. We were at the war front. And people were getting shot, and people died, and then the people that were there were sick of what they were doing, and they had to do things that would make them want to stay there, would make them feel that they were doing something that was responsible. So it was great. It was a dichotomy that was very unusual. Most of your comedy shows, you know, if you go back and see them, they didn't have that kind of plot. Problem. Most of the stuff, I mean, if you watch any of the old shows, it's like it was somebody going to get a date or somebody can borrow the car or, you know, the kind of storylines that they had. Ours had life and death.
And it was a great show, a classic show. Looking forward to seeing it on MeTV. Jamie, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Jim.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
Is Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television. Capturing television history, one voice at a time.